Well, there's some irony in this story that I broke last night. If you don't follow me on Twitter, well, correct that mistake in judgment, and then you'll see all the stories I break after hours when I'm not on this show. There's some irony in King County workers who work out of the King County Courthouse building in downtown Seattle / Pioneer Square needing security just so they can leave their place of work without getting harassed or attacked. There's some irony in this, in that Seattle has become so dangerous that King County government is now going to have security escorting employees to their buses, their trains, or their ferries for their commute home. They announced yesterday in an internal email that I was able to obtain something called the Walking Bus Pilot Program. A walking bus. They say it's a walking bus because it's a group of people that get together, and as they walk their routes, people get out of the group and get into their mode of transportation so they can get home. The reason why they're doing this is because it is too dangerous for them to walk alone or even walking in pairs. The buddy system does not protect you from the overtly aggressive and sometimes incredibly dangerous homeless population that the city of Seattle allows to continue to take over downtown and Pioneer Square. So this group will meet Monday through Friday. It starts on November 15th, so next week. The group will meet Monday through Friday throughout the afternoon for different walking sessions. One will go to the King Street station, which isn't too far away, but is especially dangerous, so folks can get on the train. And others will get to go on that other walk, which goes to the Coleman Dock and has different ferry stops along the way. And of course, when you have a bus along the way, you go in your group. And once you get to your bus stop, you depart the group and you get on the bus only to be harassed by some homeless guy on the bus. Now, in addition to this, you could always just call the security line over at the King County Courthouse. This is being done through one of their departments, the Facilities Management Division. You can call them and say, hey, I would prefer not to get stabbed in the face like that guy did the other day as he was walking his dog near Occidental Park. Could you just walk me to my bus stop? I'd really appreciate it, especially the bus stop right around the courthouse, because there are lots of homeless people who just kind of hang out there. A lot of them are dealing with mental health issues, and we don't necessarily know if they're dangerous, but we've all seen some of the videos of people getting randomly sucker punched by people who are living out on the streets that we're supposed to pretend shouldn't be put in jail or put in a facility. Got it. Now, of course, in this case, the group is meeting at the 4th Street entrance, not the 3rd Street entrance, because the 3rd Street entrance has been closed because it's too dangerous for people there because of all the homeless people. So they're meeting at the 4th Street entrance to the King County Courthouse. Now, even though this announcement that I got a hold of doesn't actually indicate whether or not these security escorts will be armed, it certainly seems unlikely, because security within the department who actually work on site, on the premises, they don't get any weapons, no guns, no handcuffs. They carry pepper spray, and they wear a bullet-resistant vest. So they get the bullet-resistant vest because the bad guys might have guns with bullets in them, but they won't benefit from actually getting a gun, a handgun of their own, or even some sort of club that they could use, a baton that they could use when they need to. Now, this has been an ongoing complaint, by the way, from the security over at this department, Facilities Management Division within King County. They said that they face a dangerous disadvantage because while they're patrolling, if they ever encounter someone who's a criminal who has a weapon, what are they supposed to do? Just call it in. Well, as they're calling it in, how many people does that person shoot or stab? Hopefully, we don't have to find that out. So this walking bus pilot program goes into effect next week, next Monday. We'll see how many people actually take it up, because we've certainly seen the polls over the last several years, or surveys, I should say, of employees there complaining about how dangerous it is. Understand the irony in that this building is filled with judges, many who are great, some who are not, and many prosecutors, some who are great, some who are not, who go easy on the very criminals that end up harassing and attacking their own employees once they leave the office. That someone goes in front of them, a repeat offender, a prolific offender who's been in front of the same judge maybe dozens of times for the same crimes, sometimes escalating crimes. And the judge or the prosecutor goes easy, says, oh, okay, you know, go seek treatment, and then that's what's best for you. And of course, treatment is best for a lot of these folks, but they don't get it. There's no mechanism to force it on them. And so what they end up doing is being released. And while you're being compassionate to the prolific offender, that prolific offender continues to commit crimes and create more victims. So we care more about the prolific offender who refuses to get help than we do about the innocent civilian who's just going about their day trying to get to work on time. That it's this unsafe around the county courthouse should embarrass the city of Seattle, the prosecutors who work in King County, and the judges. But it doesn't. And to be clear, unfortunately, unarmed security isn't going to make that much of a difference. You have homeless people in that area who can be unpredictably violent. And I mentioned that guy who got stabbed over at Occidental Park by a homeless person. He was just out walking his dog, ends up getting stabbed in the face. And at the time, he pleaded with the city to do something. What did the city do? Nothing. The council member who represents this district, his name is Andrew Lewis. Andrew Lewis said, well, you know, we don't execute any services to help the crisis. We just, you know, we come up with the budget priorities. We do some oversight. Uh-huh. You're the one who helped lead the cause to stop sweeps. Now, in that case, the mayor gave in and ended up deciding, okay, I'm going to stop sweeps. She shouldn't have, but she got pulled into it. It was politically untenable for her not to, and she's a political coward. So let's talk about, as he said at the time, he goes, the council sets the budget priorities. Okay, the budget priority right now is to cut Seattle Police Department by nearly $11 million more. This will result in dozens of officers being let go. On top of that, it results in dozens of officers, potential officers, looking at a job screening saying, oh, I thought there was an incentive bonus. Oh, they took it away over at the council so they can save some money so they can prevent people like me from being a little bit more interested in getting this job, knowing that it's already a horrible job to have to take on at this point politically. Okay, I'm out. I'll go work in Kent. I'll go work in Mill Creek. SPD currently operates under 1,000 deployable staff. That explains why violent crime has been trending in the wrong direction in this city. Last year, a 26-year high homicide rate. This year, we're just shy of meeting that number last year, but hey, still 2 months left. It is absurd. The city, the size of Seattle with this crime, is supposed to have at least 1,500 or so officers on duty. 1,500. We've got under 1,000. Something like 948, 950, something like that. This is embarrassing, but no one seems to be embarrassed. But they do acknowledge there's a problem. They're just unwilling to do anything about it. King County Executive Dow Constantine could say something. He could say the crime rate is out of control. We have to be ensuring the safety, not just with security escorts, but with actual police officers who are patrolling our neighborhoods. And I understand that you guys don't have enough staff to do the proactive policing. How about you put more money into the budget? Dow Constantine would never say that because he, too, doesn't like cops. And at the King County level, that's what we're going to start seeing with this new council. Remember, we're not going to have an elected sheriff anymore. So a sheriff who maybe wants to fight on behalf of his or her law enforcement deputies and the staff that go with it, that's not going to be a reality. They're going to pick someone who's a rabid anti-police activist, maybe with some law enforcement experience. Doesn't mean they're not going to be anti-cop. And they're going to make this county worse. So that's how this impacts you. For those of you who don't go into downtown Seattle, believe me, I get it. I don't want to go into downtown Seattle or Pioneer Square ever. I go there because that's where the Fox studio is that I use for my hits. Which, by the way, I'll be on primetime today if you want to watch that, youtube.com/JasonRants. So understand that those of you who are listening right now are like, oh, I am so glad I live here in, I don't know, North Bend, Duval, Carnation, Bellevue. It's hitting you, Shoreline and College Lake and Kirkland, too. Understand, this impacts you. This impacts you. And that's an unfortunate reality. For now, momentum is on our side. We're going into the midterms, but let's be clear, that's a year away. And those midterms, we're going to take back power in Olympia and in D.C. But between now and then, we have to make sure that we're constantly shining a spotlight on this stuff. So text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. And I'm going to send you a link to this story. Please read the story. Please post it on your social media accounts. I'd really appreciate it. Text RANTZ to 1-800-465-8770. I'll go ahead and send you a link. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
Today is Veterans Day, and there's one person who I can think of who knows what it's like to fight on behalf of veterans. Her name is Tiffany Smiley. She is running for Senate here in the state of Washington. She's challenging the incumbent, Patty Murray. Tiffany Smiley joins me now. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Jason. Thanks for having me back on.
You know, the topic of fighting for our veterans is one that we talk about constantly. We always have conversations about whether or not the VA is doing enough, whether or not this country does enough to support troops when they come back. But for a lot of folks, it's just out of an appreciation for our military. For you, it went beyond that. It hit home personally.
Yes. Yeah, you know, 16 years ago, our family's fight really began when Scotty was serving in Mosul, Iraq. He was supposed to be there for an over a year-long deployment, and all of that changed on April 6th of 2005, you know, when I received a phone call detailing the horrific news, you know, the news that every military family dreads, and it was that Scotty, in service and defense to our country, had come face-to-face with a suicide car bomb and was negotiating with the bomber. And Scotty raised his M4 and fired two rounds in front of the suicide bomber, and he detonated his car, sending shrapnel into both of Scotty's eyes. Not only that, you know, on this phone call, the commanding officer proceeded to tell me that they, you know, one thing they were certain of is that Scotty would never see again the rest of his life. The shrapnel completely obliterated both of his eyes. The second thing they weren't sure of is if he would survive. And in that moment, you know, Scotty didn't know it yet, but he gave his eyes in service to this country. Our family sacrificed his eyes in service to this country. And, you know, Scotty was willing to volunteer and go on the front lines along with so many other men and women in our armed services to go on the front line, volunteer Army, volunteer Navy, volunteer Air Force, and put it out there for us. I mean, they fought for us, so I will always stand up and fight for them. And, you know, that's when my real fight began. And I saw sort of behind the curtain in the bureaucratic government system and how we were treating our veterans. And we have a lot of work to do, but I will never stop fighting for them.
And it feels like for a lot of folks, they say that, but then don't follow through. You're someone who saw it and you followed through. The people who serve in the Senate, like, for example, Senator Tom Cotton, who knows a thing or two about these issues, also follows through. He just endorsed you today.
Yes, he did. And you know, it's such an honor to be endorsed by Senator Cotton. I worked with him on some of this legislation. In one of my speeches with him a few weeks ago, I said, you know, he always took the knock on my door. And not only that, he sat down and he always listened. And I can't say that for everyone that I would meet with on Capitol Hill. But Senator Cotton did. And not only that, this you know, horrific events in Afghanistan that our nation has gone through in August, Senator Cotton was right at the front line in helping getting our allies, Afghanistan's out and Americans out. I was in touch with his office from the very beginning, helping get friends and allies out, and his office was set up and ready and successful. And so I am honored to have Senator Cotton's endorsement. I'm grateful for his leadership as a veteran to this country, and I look forward to working hard with him to win here in Washington State and to work with him in the Senate.
What's the first thing you would do in office on this issue?
Well, you know, number one, there needs to be accountability and transparency. I mean, the VA gets billions of dollars So we have to start asking the hard questions of why isn't this really serving our veterans, and is there a better way to be doing this? So number one, I would focus on accountability and transparency. The taxpayers, we owe it to the taxpayers to know where their money is going and who it is serving. Number two, I would work very, very diligently on addressing the mental health crisis within our veterans. The suicide rate continues to go up. Mm-hmm. And while it's not often a sexy topic to talk about in Congress, it's the right thing to do. And it's absolutely necessary. So it's absolutely the top two that I would get to work on right away.
Just joining us, I'm talking with Tiffany Smiley. She is running for Senate here in Washington State. She is a candidate who actually has a chance at taking on Patty Murray, and that's the first time we've said that in a very long time, because we've had previous candidates who didn't really sort of walk the walk. But Tiffany Smiley does. Her website, by the way, smileyforwashington.com. It's all spelled out, smileyforwashington.com. Do you think the VA is too big? Is that part of the issue? Because we always hear the conversations about bureaucracy, and bureaucracy comes out of massive agencies. Is the VA too big to serve?
Yes, it is. It is very, very big. And it's clear that, you know, it's easy in that situation to pay lip service to the sacrifice of our men and women. And too many of them are not given the support and the opportunities that they earned and deserved. So we need to, like I said, you know, it comes down to accountability and transparency as our government. We need to know if our processes are working, right?
Mm-hmm.
Measure them.
Absolutely.
Start to measure if our processes are actually working and delivering. You know, if the VA was a business in the private sector, it would not be in business anymore. So that says something, right? Let's make sure that we are delivering to the customer. I will never forget when Scotty, you know, was beginning his rehabilitation and we're 23 and 24 years old. We have our whole life ahead of us. Scotty just lost his eyesight in service to our country. I had resigned from my job. We had student loan debt. We had car payments. And we're trying to get back on our feet. And we get to the VA and they offered him cassette tapes. And I remember feeling like they are not prepared for our future.
Mm-hmm.
They are archaic. They were not prepared for a 24-year-old to come in here from a blast injury. And so in those moments, those are the pieces that I started to put together. And as a nurse, I naturally take a holistic approach. So in some ways, I gave up my nursing career, but there was so much more to fight for. And I am still being a nurse. And that's how I saw it. That's how I took on VA reform and fought for our veterans every step of the way, because it is necessary. And a nation that forgets its defenders will itself be forgotten. And I never want to see that happen on our watch. And I want our children. Scotty and I have three amazing boys who they know why their father is blind. If you can imagine the conversations that we've had to have with those three boys. At various levels, you know, in their mm-hmm. development to what they could process. But we've had to say that their father is blind because a suicide bomber looked him in the eyes in Iraq in service to our country and tried to kill him. And instead of killing him, he took his eyesight. Scotty's never seen our three kids. Mm. And they at certain points, they've grieved and cried and realized that something was taken from them as well. But also, that is the reason our family fights every single day.
Yeah.
And they know why their mother is fighting for the United States Senate. They know that our country is not free without veterans like their father. And so, you know, though heartbreaking, it also sets a level of precedence in our family that we will always stand up and fight for what's right, because their future depends on it. I want to have a country in 10, 20 years that my children, that for them, that it's worth losing their eyesight for. So we will never stop fighting and standing up for our veterans. And today, I think if there's any veteran listening, thank you for your service. We are a grateful family. We will always fight on your behalf. And just thank you so much for your selfless service. And, you know, as we look to the future, I think it's clear that we need servant leaders in Congress on both sides.
Yeah.
And so I look forward to getting to work.
Yeah, and I want you at work so badly, because just hearing the passion that you bring to the table, the ideas that you actually bring to the table, we know that you would do an amazing job in Senate. We just got to get you there. And so for folks who want to help get Tiffany Smiley to the U.S. Senate, Make sure you visit her website, smileyforwashington.com. There are different ways you can help out with the campaign, including donating to the campaign. It's an expensive race. Smileyforwashington.com, S-M-I-L-E-Y, forwashington.com. Tiffany, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Jason, and happy Veterans Day to all the veterans past and present and those that are currently serving. Thank you so
Absolutely.
Much.
Absolutely, and please make sure that from the Jason Rancho and KTTH, you wish your husband, Captain Scotty Smiley, a happy Veterans
Thank
Day
you.
As well.
I will. Thank you so much.
You're listening to the Jason Rancho Show.
Yelm, Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Rance Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at the time. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Alpine Specialty Cleaning at alpineclean.com. This is the part of the show where we spend all of our time talking about the communities you live in and care about most, and we completely ignore the city of Seattle. The rest of the media is all hyper-focused on Seattle. We start with a situation that seems to be spreading. Yesterday, Bellevue and Kent school districts came out and said that they were closing schools tomorrow due to a lack of staff. A lot of teachers have today off because of the holiday, a holiday that they're pretending that they care about. And unfortunately, they all pretty much decided to say, hey, we're going to take Friday off too. We'd like that four-day weekend. They claim it's due to fatigue that they've had for the few weeks that they've returned to the classrooms for their jobs. Fatigue. After spending all of last year at home in pajamas, pretending to teach remote classes. Got it. That's, of course, absurd. It's absolutely absurd. It's why so many parents are ticked off right now. They got virtually no notice. Trying to figure out then what they're going to have to do with their kids. Now, today, the big issue was with Lake Washington's school district, or the Lake Washington school district. They said that they're trying to juggle as many resources as possible to keep campuses open tomorrow. That, at least according to the administrators. And for folks like Mike, he's a parent in the school district. He's got a kid who goes to one of the schools. He at least is happy knowing they're trying their best.
Well, I appreciate that they're trying to do that. And it's unfortunate we find ourselves in this situation where we've got staffing shortages.
Well, let's just clear this up, because in reality, we don't find ourselves in it. They did this, right? Schools did this. The district did it. Teachers did. They did this. They decided to impose vaccine mandates. Inslee did. Teachers were calling for them. There was a decision that was made by the state and the districts to say no to people who were asking for religious exemptions or medical exemptions. They did this. It's certainly true that, and we talked about this yesterday, that there's a substitute teacher shortage. That's absolutely true. But let's be crystal clear here. This problem is of our own making, of our own doing, the current one that we have. You could have just said no to the teachers asking for tomorrow off. Sorry, no. Your job is more important than you pretending to have to get over fatigue. Jeanette, who has twin boys attending first grade in the Lake Washington School District, spoke with Como TV. She's obviously annoyed.
I think it's pretty ridiculous that teachers are burnt out already.
Yep.
I mean, that's their job, to teach the kids, you know, 5 days a week.
Yeah, imagine being burnt out. Not just after all of last year working from home, but the fact that you get summer vacation, unlike any other business, any other person. You get all that time, but you're burnt out. Oh, you're burnt out. Like the other parent, she's happy that the district is doing what it can to make up for this. Administrators apparently canceled many of the professional development opportunities that would require teachers to be outside of the classroom for tomorrow. According to Como TV, they say they directed their entire central office and support staff to fill in and provide extra supports in the classroom. And now you've got Federal Way Public Schools saying, we figured it out. We will be operating tomorrow on a normal schedule. And you know what? The people who you didn't expect to step up actually did. The superintendent, the deputy superintendent, the central office staff, the leaders there, they're filling in as substitute teachers, or they call it in Como's piece, guest teachers. On top of that, the district is offering a minimum $200 a day for the substitutes who step up. Parents said, yeah, this is the least you can do. This is the least you can do to help us here. Because you've got people like Jeanette who's just struggling to figure out what they're going to do with their own kids tomorrow because they got to work.
Well, the people that need to go to work would have to stay home or find alternate childcare.
Now, that's obviously an issue that's facing parents right now in Bellevue. Today, you're trying to figure out what you're going to do about tomorrow because the Bellevue School District has canceled its classes. Same reason. They're just so tired. Oh, it's really hard to, you know, show up to work 5 days a week. I mean, you ask us to do this for like 2 months? That's not right. What about work-life balance? Last year, we got to spend all of our work life at home. You expect us to wait till winter break and then summer break? And a spring break and a fall, that's just, you can't do that to us. So the Boys and Girls Club of Bellevue, they've stepped up. President Tim Mott spoke with King 5, and they're providing services.
Truly turning no kid away is kind of our goal for Friday.
Turning no kid away. He expects hundreds of kids are going to show up at their centers in the district. They've got capacity of about 750, but say they'll make adjustments if they need to. They're going to offer activities, help with homework, that kind of stuff. They'll offer food for kids as well. They're actually stepping up in a really big way.
It's unnerving to them to say, like, oh my gosh, you mean the people that are in charge of me every single day aren't available on Friday, so there's no one to take care of me? Well, don't worry, your Boys and Girls Club family is here. And that was the whole impetus behind us being open.
So kudos to them for doing something, saying something. Kudos to them for that. They didn't need to make it in this kind of way. It's not like they're making millions of dollars off of this tomorrow. They're just saying we want to help kids, and we also want to make sure that a lot of kids are getting fed because a lot of them get a lot of their nutrition from schools.
I got a few calls from parents saying, look, I plan out the meals, my food rations, and my money like to the day, and now that, you know, my four kids aren't getting their breakfast and their lunch from school, I don't know how I'm going to replace that.
So the only thing that they're asking you to do is maybe register ahead of time. You can go online. They've got their numbers there. If you're in a position where you need that kind of help, I feel awful for these parents who have to deal with this. I mean, they got this notice on Tuesday. That's not a lot of time, especially because you're trying to figure out, you're already doing something on Thursday. I saw some people on Twitter trying to make excuses. Well, a lot of these people are going out of town anyway. They're taking 4 day weekends. They were just going to pull their kid out of class on Friday. Shut up. You're just making that up. You have no idea what you're talking about. Stop this nonsense of making excuses at any cost, including your own dignity. Just because we're talking about teachers. It's just absolutely absurd. But since we're in Bellevue, let's close out with one more Bellevue story. It's tied to the city that we don't talk about. Unless, of course, according to the bylaws governing the topics that we choose for the big local, it allows us to call it out when we are making a mockery of them or telling you how they screwed something up and someone else is doing it better. In this case, we've got the first East Link light rail track trace training car being tested. That's not easy to say. East Link light rail track. Yeah, see? The first train that's going to go from Seattle to Bellevue and vice versa is currently being tested. In fact, if you were driving earlier today, you probably saw some of the cars being towed on the corridor between downtown Bellevue and the Microsoft campus. Now, it's supposed to go throughout the next several days. In fact, it should go for about a week. So they're doing all of this testing right now. And part of it is they're doing clearance testing along the tracks. Passenger service is supposed to begin in Seattle and Bellevue in 2023.
We've seen the tracks go up, but when I think you see the vehicle there, you know, it really brings it home that this is not too far off, really.
That's Rachel Cunningham from Sound Transit. When this is fully in place, you will start to see the demise of Seattle's business aura as we know it. It's already kind of gone away because Amazon has very clearly been moving jobs into Bellevue, but they're still dealing, obviously, with a base of employees who live in Seattle. Some live very close, others live a little bit outside, but they take the bus to work, they walk, they bike, whatever it is they're doing. Well, all of a sudden, if you move more of your jobs into Bellevue, and you can tell them, hey, you know what? You're already just 2 minutes from the campus. Here's the light rail station that's an additional 4 minutes away. Hop on that. You can work in Bellevue. Well, at some point in the long term, that's going to lead to more jobs in Bellevue and more people living in Bellevue, because not everyone wants to make that commute. And if you're working from Amazon from out of state, you got the job, you're not going to live in Seattle. You're going to probably rent your apartment or buy your home or rent your home closer to your office. Because we're talking about people who are generally younger. They want to be a little bit closer to the office. They don't want to have to put up with a large commute, and they don't necessarily need to live outside of their main hub where their office is, because they don't need all that much room. They tend to be younger people who don't have families. And when they have families, guess what? You go into Redmond. You go into Issaquah, Sammamish. There's plenty of space there. This was done by Seattle, and Bellevue is going to be the beneficiary of it. And good for them. This is a city that has worked really, really hard to ensure that they treat businesses right. And now it's paying off. City that treats businesses poorly, they do it on purpose, they do it outwardly, they don't even try to hide it, they're the ones that get punished. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. Since we're on the topic of the big local, very quickly, every single Thursday, we do a video segment, the Jason Rand Show video update. And it's available right now, and we take you through a pretty amazing program helping homeless veterans out of the city of Orting. And this particular video, like everyone on Thursday, is brought to you by the Novak team, powered by Keller Williams. You can visit them online at meetthenovaks.com. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. I think it's rather astonishing how people can see the same thing, but if you are an activist on either side, you can have a completely different takeaway. Now, I am not an activist in the sense of looking at the Kyle Rittenhouse trial and really what led to it. I'm not an activist in that way, in the sense that I said that it was stupid for Kyle Rittenhouse to do what he did. I think that it was wrong for him to do it. Not the whole idea of wanting to help. Kudos to him for wanting to help. But he was a 17-year-old kid who decided to go from a city he didn't go to a city he didn't live in to try to protect, do security. It wasn't purely security. I understand that he was there to do medical aid. He's not trained for that in any meaningful way. Yes, I know he was a firefighter cadet and all that. I'm not hitting at him for wanting to help. And I certainly understand why so many people wanted to help and felt that call, including a call to arms to help, because thanks to the Democratic Party, nothing was being done about these riots and businesses, innocent businesses, were being impacted. So I totally get it. That said, it's obviously still wrong for a kid to go ahead and do that. However, looking at all of the facts, and in this case, it made it really, really easy to not have to be biased or an activist, because it's all caught on video, multiple angles, all of it. We saw everything. He was very clearly the one who wasn't the aggressor, but the victim. There was a woman from the Young Turks. Young Turks is a YouTube channel very far to the left, media channel. And she's on there last night talking, or yesterday afternoon. She's on there talking about how, you know, initially, because she's very far to the left, she was going after Kyle Rittenhouse and she viewed him as the one who was the aggressor. And then it turns out she paid attention to the trial and said, you know what? I was wrong. I own it. He was not the aggressor. So people who are at least trying to be honest will look at the evidence and say, yeah, it's very clear that Kyle Rittenhouse was the victim. You can still say he shouldn't have been there, as I do. But he was very clearly the victim. And had he not protected himself, shot three people, killing two of them, who were attacking him, chasing him, going for his gun, he would have been killed. That's what he believed, and I think that that is a reasonable belief. I mean, even when you look at the one witness that was the survivor, and we'll play some of his audio later on in the show, when he comes out and acknowledges in court that Kyle Rittenhouse only shot at him after he had pointed his handgun at Kyle Rittenhouse, that kind of makes the point for Kyle Rittenhouse. But of course, this gets turned into a racial issue. I mean, after all, he's a white supremacist, Kyle Rittenhouse. That's what we were told, a white supremacist who only shot white people. Weird. But immediately it gets turned into something about race. They talked about it on MSNBC this morning with Joe Scarborough.
If Kyle Rittenhouse had been a black guy, had gone up with an AR-15 around his neck and talked to police officers, they wouldn't have been treated him the way they treated Kyle Rittenhouse. It wouldn't be, oh, yeah, cool, great, thanks, great to have you here.
He doesn't know what he's talking about, but he says that because he wants to play into this narrative that he thinks his audience will love. And you know what? On MSNBC, the audience probably does love that nonsense. They love the racial discord. But it is tearing this country apart, and they don't care because they think they're morally justified in making the arguments that they're making. He knows that that's nonsense, especially in the context of this kid. The cops didn't even know anything had happened at the time that they made contact with him. And I can tell you this as a certainty. There were plenty of black people and white people on the left who were at CHOP / CHAZ who were armed, openly armed. Cops didn't go in and do anything. Why is that? Why didn't the evil racist white supremacists do anything at that point? Oh, because they're not evil or racist or white supremacists.
In Kenosha with your AR-15 wrapped around your neck. Yeah, go. Yeah, fine. Charles, there's no doubt about it. It's laughable
for
anybody who would suggest otherwise.
Of course.
Now, because police officers didn't stop him earlier, we have some dead people who looks like aren't going to receive justice.
Okay. Yeah. He is such a bad faith partisan hack. That's what he's become. One of those people who was a moderate Republican, but then said, ooh, I might be able to keep my job, high paying job here on MSNBC by playing the token Republican who doesn't even call himself a Republican anymore. That's how bad things have gotten. People aren't getting justice. What you mean is Kyle Rittenhouse is the one you don't want to have justice. Now, of course, people on the left mocked him yesterday for crying, breaking down on the stand. Let me ask you this. Would they mock, this would play Joe Scarborough, would they mock the victim breaking down on the stand if the victim was black? Or would they call it heroic that he got through his testimony the way that he did? Joy Behar, who's just the worst. She was on The View this morning and just claiming it was all fake.
Oh, baloney.
Oh, baloney. Oh, the crowd laughed. You have to be a soulless ghoul to look at that, even if you think he's guilty, but a soulless ghoul to look at that and just say it was a performance. Maybe because Joy Behar doesn't have any feelings. Maybe because she is incapable of expressing any sort of emotion other than anger and jealousy. Maybe if we had someone who understood what it's like to be, you know, human, going through something horrible, who didn't want to have to go through with that, maybe she would understand. But instead, oh, baloney. And her audience cackles behind her.
Oh, baloney.
Oh, baloney.
What did you think of the testimony? Well, I know what you thought, Joy, but what the rest of you?
Well, he goes across.
This, yeah.
I mean, from what I'm gleaning from this case, the guy goes across state lines with an AR-15 with his mother and some other idiot in the car to defend himself against what? They're having a protest in another state, and he takes it upon himself to go there, you know, and then he says it's self-defense. No. And that acting job of the crying, I can't even look at it.
Well, this is
that is one of the worst acting jobs I've ever seen.
Well, in fairness, Joy Behar would know something bad about acting, but she's too, well, never mind. I was going to call her a name. I'll just let that clip stand for itself. She's a bad person. She's a bad person. She knows it. And the people who clap along with that and want to pretend that they have any clue what it is they're talking about outside of their own bias, they're also bad people. 1-800-465-8777 if you want to send me a text. Don't forget I was on Fox News Prime Time. Make sure if you missed it, check out our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Jason Rantz. YouTube.com/Jason Rantz.